any ideas, Lamont. Speak up.
I will.
Tom? Oh, come in, Mr. Carter. Miss Lane, Mr. Carter, Mr. Cranston.
How do you do, Mr. Carter?
Tom, please.
Thank you.
You were with Mrs. Bryce when she found the body, I believe.
Why, she called me and asked me to come over.
You live nearby?
Next door. I just happened to be standing talking over the hedge with Mr. Bryce's gardener when she called.
And you both ran to the house?
Yes. Mrs. Bryce said she'd heard something that sounded like a shot from the library.
Did you yourself hear that shot?
No, I can't say that I did.
All right, sir, that'll be all.
Just a moment, Mr. Carter. Aren't you an actor?
Yes, I am.
Weren't you supposed to play the lead in Bryce's show, which opened Thursday night?
Well, I read that you were in rehearsal, and then that Bryce had dropped you at the last moment.
Is that true?
I resigned. I wasn't fired.
That's all. You may go. But don't leave town, understand?
But...
That's all.
Very well.
It could be a motive for murder, being fired.
It was a good part. And his successor made a hit.
I see. Tom? Come in, Muller. Where were you, Muller, when Mrs. Bryce called to you?
Why, in the garden, working, sir. And talking to Mr. Carter.
How far is the garden from the house, Mr. Muller?
It's different in different places. The lot is an odd shape. My cottage is at the back.
I see. I've just been sketching a ground plan of the house and gardens. Will you check on it and see if it's right, please?
May I see it, sir?
Yes.
No, that is wrong. It should go...
Take my pencil and correct it, if you will.
Thank you, sir. Now, it goes like this.
Uh-huh.
And,
Did you hear that shot, Muller?
Huh? Oh, the shot. Pardon me, I was absorbed in this drawing. And no, I heard no shot. But I was some distance off, at this spot in the plan.
I see. Was there any difficulty about opening the library door?
Well, yes and no.
Yes and no? What do you mean?
Well, Mrs. Bryce was in the house when she heard the shot, and she ran to the library, but she couldn't get the door open. And then she came and called to Mr. Carter and me.
Did you and Carter have any trouble opening it?
No, sir.
What time was it when Mrs. Bryce called to you and Carter?
About 4:00. Because I noticed the clock in the library said 4:05.
We have a common interest.
A common interest?
Flowers. Those from your garden are magnificent.
Oh, yes. This year the garden was particularly lovely. I don't think there's ever been a time when we've had such beautiful geraniums.
Yes, sir. Geraniums?
They're a common flower, but Mellow grows such beautiful ones.
I see. Mrs. Bryce, how long has Muller been with you?
Since April.
Did Muller and Mr. Bryce get along well?
I doubt if they ever spoke 10 words to each other.
Mr. Bryce was away a good deal?
Yes.
Mrs. Bryce, I understand you've been away on a visit and returned this afternoon. What time did the train get in?
At 2:40.
You came directly home?
Yes, sir.
Now, when did you hear the shot?
Just as I opened the front door.
Mrs. Bryce, Muller told me that you didn't call him until a few minutes after 4:00.
Well, I don't see...
It would take a taxi about 20 minutes to cover the distance from the station, so if your train arrived at 2:40, you'd be entering the house about 3 o'clock.
Yes, but I...
Why, after hearing the shot, did you wait an hour before you called to Carter?
I wasn't sure it was a shot. I thought it was a door slamming somewhere. I thought my husband was at home.
Oh, so you didn't pay much attention to it then?
No, sir, I decided it was just...
And then about an hour later, you went to the library.
Yes, I found the door was stuck, so I called to Mr. Carter.
Why didn't you call your husband?
I didn't know he was at home.
A moment ago, you said you thought he was home.
Yes, but I...
Mrs. Bryce, isn't it true that you and your husband have been separated for the past 6 months? Hasn't he been living in an apartment downtown?
Yes, but he does come home occasionally. He comes when I'm not around. He has a picture in the library. He comes to look at it.
A picture?
A painting of a woman. A woman all dressed in black. He used to sit there at his desk sometimes and stare at it for hours. He was in love with it. He was in love with that woman just the same as if she were a real flesh and blood person. That's what caused our quarrel.
Mrs. Bryce, you're nervous and upset, naturally. We'll postpone this talk till some other time.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Weston.
Well.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, Mrs. Bryce.
Goodbye.
Hey, what kind of a nitwit does she think I am? You were right, Lamont. It's murder. And she's the one who killed him.
No, Weston. She's telling the truth.
Lamont, Mrs. Bryce is really jealous of that painting. And yet she doesn't know that it's a picture of Diane Morrow.
Miss Lane, Diane Morrow and Albert Gurner, too, are dead.
Yes, the lady in black is dead, Commissioner. But sometimes the dead don't remain in their graves.
room now. The smell of the flowers. Oh, Norman. Norman, what made you kill yourself? If only the dead could speak to us. Norman. Norman, why did you marry me when all the time you loved the woman in black? I hate her. What? Well, the canvas is cut already. Here at the bottom. Why, the frame moves. There's a space behind it. Sort of closet. And what's this? It looks like a gas mask with a tank attached. Who's there? What do you want?
Give that to me.
What are you doing here? Is this gas mask yours?
Give it to me.
I see now. Norman didn't kill himself. He was murdered, this mask. You killed him, didn't you?
I killed him.
Let go of me! What are you doing? Take that away, or I'm safe.
What time is it anyway, Lamont?
2 o'clock, Mother.
2 o'clock in the morning. It's a fine hour for a country drive.
You didn't need to come out to Bryce's.
Well, I'm too curious to stay at home and be left out of it. Lamont, this case haunts me. There's something evil about it. That smile on the face of that painting.
Yeah, what about the smile on Bryce's face? A smiling corpse, Margot. Yes, a horrible criminal is loose and doing murder. And the murderer may strike again. Oh, here we are. Quiet now.
All right.
Don't talk. Let's walk in the grass beside the walk. Come along.
Who's there? What do you want?
It's Cranston, Cardona.
Oh, Miss Lane. What in time are you doing here?
Has anything happened?
Perfectly quiet. The actor next door went up to bed at 11. Light in the library a few minutes ago. Mrs. Bryce, I guess.
But didn't you make sure?
She's the only one in the house. Must have been her.
How about Miller, the gardener?
Light's been out in his cottage for a couple of hours. Everything's serene. What was that?
A shot. From the library. Come on in there. Hurry.
It's Mrs. Bryce. Shot to death. Oh, and that smile on her face. It's the same smile as in the painting. Oh, it's horrible.
Suicide again. Hey, look, Mr. Cranston. This gun ain't no new kind. Must be 15 to 20 years old.
Yes, I know. Bryce's gun was at headquarters, so he had to use this one.
What do you mean, he? The woman shot it off.
Cardona, go phone Weston, quickly.
Yeah, I'd better.
Mont, what does it mean?
Margot, don't leave the house. I won't be long.
Where are you going?
The shadow has work to do.
Who's there? Who is it? I must have imagined someone knocked. My nerves are playing tricks on me. This won't do. When they come to tell me, I've got to be calm. I'll go to bed.
Wait a moment, Albert Garner.
What? Who spoke? Where are you?
It's no use to try to locate me with your flashlight. I am the shadow. You cannot see me, Gurner.
Why do you call me Gurner? My name is Muller. I work here. I'm the gardener.
Yes, a gardener with a remarkable knowledge of chemistry. You were a chemist, Gurner, as well as a painter, weren't you?
I'm no chemist or painter.
Then why did you slash the picture of the lady in black to pieces?
Mrs. Bryce did that. She was jealous of the lady in black.
How did you know that the picture was slashed, unless you were there?
I won't stay here and...
Get away from that door. No, you don't. Get back.
No. Let me alone! Let me alone!
That face in the picture has haunted you all the years. Albert Gurner, the lady in black, was your wife. You murdered her.
Yes. Yes, I am Gurner. But I didn't kill Diane. She committed suicide.
You murdered her with a poisonous gas that you invented. It leaves no trace except a horrible smile on the faces of its victims.
I tell you, she shot herself.
No, you shot her, Gurner. Then later, when you and the butler heard the explosion, it was a time bomb you had set. And someplace in this cottage, you have a mask for administering gas. You're very strong. You clasp it to the victim's face. And when they become unconscious, you shoot them and leave a pistol by them. And the murder is called suicide.
But I love Diane. Why would I kill her?
Because you suspected her of being in love with Bryce, her manager. You knew Bryce loved her. And you couldn't be sure of her any longer.
All right. All right. It drove me mad, the uncertainty.
And you killed her.
Yes, I did kill her. Then Bryce saw the picture. I told him once about my experiments. He suspected me. He was going to the police. So I ran away.
Then as years passed, you wanted to return and kill the man you thought had ruined your life. The man you were jealous of even after Diane Morrow was dead.
Yes. And I did kill him. No one can take that away from me.
But tell me, why did you kill Mrs. Bryce? She had done nothing.
She found the mask. I had to kill her.
Well, Gerner, Commissioner Weston will soon be here. You will take the mask and give yourself up to him.
Very well. I'll do as you say. I'll go...
Gerner, wait. Put that down, man.
No,
no. Take off that mask. Take it off, I say.
He's gone. Dead from the gas. With that same smile on his face.
This table suit you, Margot?
Very nicely.
All right, Louis. We'll order later.
Very good, sir.
Lamont, what I want to know is how you solved this case. Where did you get your first clue?
Why, you gave it to me.
I did?
Yes. You called my attention to the fact that the background of the painting was composed of flowers, of geraniums.
Well?
Well, when Diane Morrow died, her room was filled with geraniums.
Oh, and you thought that those and the geraniums in Bryce's library had some connection?
Precisely. And the ventilation of Bryce's library?
The ventilation?
Yes. It had been worked out so that quite a strong draft swept through the room.
Why, of course. It was the draft that held the door shut.
Yes. And it also caused the door to slam shut so violently when that Mrs. Bryce thought it was a shot long after Bryce was dead.
Oh.
And the draft also cleared the room of the gas, which smelled like geraniums.
Well, then the geraniums were there to explain away whatever traces of the gas might be left.
Exactly.
Only, Lamont, how did you know that Muller was really Gurner?
Oh, that was the simplest part of the case. He helped draw a map of the house and gardens. And he used the same queer, hook-shaped strokes that identify Gurner's work anywhere.
Oh, here you are.
Oh, hello, Commissioner.
I'm sorry I'm late.
Well, there's no hurry. We've loads of time.
Well, certainly.
We're merely going to drop in at the Pan American Art Exhibit this evening.
The art exhibit? Pictures? Oh, why don't you take up something practical?
Distinguished heating expert, John Bunn.
Thank you, Ken Roberts, and good evening, friends. Today I want to say a word on behalf of your neighborhood blue coal dealer. You know, folks, there are three ways in which you can help yourself and help him. First, don't order more than enough coal to keep your home comfortably warm for 60 days in advance. Second, don't waste heat. Don't waste coal. Ask your blue coal dealer for the free John Barclay firing chart. This will give you many valuable hints on correct firing methods and how to save money on fuel bills. The third way you can help your dealer is to accept delivery of the available home sizes he recommends. You see, friends, tests have proven that any of the home sizes, egg, stove, chestnut, or pea, may often be interchanged with perfectly good results. In fact, it's a good plan to always order 1 ton of pea coal to 3 of your regular size, and use the more economic pea coal for banking. This holds down the fire, helps save coal. Now, ladies and gentlemen, if you'll cooperate with your blue coal dealer in these three ways, I'm sure you'll have enough coal to keep your home healthfully and comfortably warm all this winter. And so will your neighbors. I thank you.
The Shadow Program is based on a story copyrighted by Stephen Smith Publications. The characters, names, places, and plot are fictitious. Any similarity to persons living or dead is purely coincidental. Again next week, the Shadow will demonstrate that
the weed of crime bears bitter fruit. Crime does not pay. The Shadow knows.
Next week, same same time, same station, your friendly Blue Coal dealer brings you another strange and thrilling adventure in the Shadows' daring battle against the forces of evil. Be sure to listen. This story produced by the DL&W Coal Company, distributors of Blue Coal. This is Mutual.
Ja, een zelfvertrekte sproeiersgarage met ja, met een trekker met allemaal aanhangers, met lichtbaren. Oh, wacht, dat is een kraan hier met een mega heftruck. FDI Sambron staat erop. Nou, nou, dat is jammer, hij stopt er al mee. Ah, I thought you were going to give a show.
Sorry?
I thought you were going to give a show with the machine.
Show with the machine?
Yeah, I thought you were going to...
No, I just need to back up and make it to my garage.
Okay. Nou, oké, okay. Geen mega heftruck show. Hé, hey, kijk, ik zie wel een Parknest bewoner.
Hallo.
Hallo.
Hey.
Zijn jullie weer met de hele met de personeelsvereniging van Parknest?
Nou, nee, maar best wel met een aantal. Dirk, ja? En Suus en Nash, die helpt hier.
Ah, oké, okay, heel leuk.
Ja.
Gezellig.
Ja, ja. Is leuk, ja. Ja, dus wij zijn hier vanavond naar Parknest.
Ja. En ja. Heb je al wat meegemaakt vandaag?
Nee, nog niet. Nee, nog wel aangekomen. Maar ik begrijp dat er nog wel wat muziek is.
Ja, er komt een geweldige band hier.
Hier, deze, ja. Die grote.
Ja. Dat wordt echt fantastisch.
Ja, en er is nu al iets bezig daar bij die,
bij die caravan. Oh, leuk. Oh, shit. Oh, daar ja. Had ik beloofd om te komen. Oh, shit.
Ja,
oh,
dan moet je snel filmen dan. Moet je snel filmen.
Wow. Shit, ja, dat gebeurde gisteren ook. Dat is die gekke Spaanse show.
Oh?
Van de Los Galindos.
Oh, hiernaast.
Die lopen allemaal rond. En op een gegeven moment krijg je allemaal explosies. Dus,
oh nee.
Ja, ik weet niet.
Uitkijken voor je leven.
Geen idee wat waar, maar dat was gisteren ook al. Dus.
Nou,
ik ga snel die kant op.
Ja. Doe maar. Doe maar.
Ja, dus waarschijnlijk is bij Kiki's caravan dat nu. Kiki zelf spelen misschien. Ja, en die andere band is zich aan het klaarmaken. Die naam is me weer opgeschoten. Het is heel vervelend. Maar...
better look in.
Adventures of the Shadow are on the air, brought to you each week by the Blue Coal Dealers of America. These dramatizations are designed to demonstrate forcibly to old and young alike that crime does not pay. Before the Shadow begins today's adventure, I want to ask you a very important question. Have you enough coal left in your bin to round out the heating season? April is often a colder month than you'd ever realize. So if your bin is getting low, play safe. Take my tip and try a ton of Blue Coal. It will give you a steady flow of clean, radiant, healthful warmth that will enable you to wind up this winter season comfortably and economically as well. Phone your neighborhood Blue Coal dealer tomorrow, won't you? The Shadow, mysterious character who aids the forces of law and order, is in reality Lamont Cranston, wealthy young man about town. As the Shadow, Cranston is gifted with hypnotic power to cloud men's minds so that they cannot see him. Cranston's friend and companion, the lovely Margot Lane, is the only person who knows to whom the voice of the invisible Shadow belongs. Today's drama, Voodoo.
Major, Major Spire, tell me, just what is a hero?
Well, Margot, I'm afraid that I've never been able to answer that question to my own satisfaction.
But you've seen so many men under fire.
Yes, I know. But the men I've seen under fire have been fighting for something they believed in. Now, I don't think you can call that heroism.
No?
No. To fight for what you know to be true and to your best interest is just good, plain, common horse sense. Do you understand what I mean, Lamont?
I do, Major. I've always said that heroes should be judged by the measure of fear they have in their hearts. Not by what they do, but by how afraid they were to do it.
Well, that makes them pretty rare individuals, doesn't it, Lamont?
It does, Margot. I think I've only known one man who really measured up to those qualities in all my life.
Who was that, Lamont?
Sebastian. Remember him?
Yes. Yes, I do.
And don't you think he was a real hero?
Yes, he was.
Sebastian?
I don't think I've ever heard of him. Was he recommended for the service course?
No, Major. Sebastian was a man who crossed our paths one summer on Little Cauldron Island, one of the more remote of the Geechee group, about 80 miles off the Georgia coast.
But who was Sebastian?
Oh, just a chap who passed unknown and unsung. But for my money, he was a model of the purest form of heroism.
Well, I'd like to hear about him.
Very well. May I fill your glass, Major?
Oh, yes, thanks.
Well, Margot and I were vacationing on Little Cauldron that summer. The island was virtually owned by Gerald and Edmund Fergus. It's a desolate place. In fact, the Fergus brothers and their sister Polly were the only whites living there. The rest of the population consisted of some 2,000 backward and illiterate natives.
Backward and illiterate? That's giving the natives a break, Lamont.
You see, Major, these natives practiced a peculiar form of voodooism. They worshipped reptiles.
Worshipped reptiles?
I know it seems unbelievable to find such primitiveness only a few hours' journey from the Georgia coast. Nevertheless, it's true. I still carry proof of it here on my watch chain.
What is it?
A bit of hard wood carved to resemble a serpent's head. The natives use it to ward off evil.
The natives call it a snake stone. All of them wear one tied around the neck.
Yes. Well, one day, just about dusk, during our first week on the island, Gerald Fergus, Margot, and I had gone down to the beach to meet the mail launch. Edmund Fergus was in his study on the lower floor of the big house attending to his accounts. Everything was quite orderly, routine, except that up in Miss Polly's room, at the rear of the big frame mansion.
The safe is heavy tonight, Steenie.
Very heavy.
Where are you going?
Downstairs, Miss Polly.
Wait until I've finished dressing, please.
Tonight, night of dance congo. All peoples make big dance for spirits of dead. Steenie, go now.
Oh, no, please don't go. They'll begin those dreadful drums in a moment.
If you're afraid of dark, you'd like to take this, maybe?
What is it?
Snake stone. Belong to Steenie. Keep evil spirits away.
Oh, I don't believe in your superstition, Steenie.
Then Steenie, go.
No, please, Steenie.
It do you no good for me to stay.
What do you mean?
Miss Polly know that Govi, Papaloy, which man of Little Cauldron, put voodoo on Mr. Edmund, Mr. Gerald, and her, too.
Oh, I don't believe that, Steenie. Besides, if Papa Loy has to have some of our clothing or our hair, something that belongs to us to make the voodoo work.
You're right, Miss Polly. You're right.
Of course I'm right.
Maybe Miss Polly noticed the Sini clean her hairbrush. Miss Polly must be careful. She's losing hair. Mr. Gerald, Mr. Edmund losing hair, too. All Fergus leave hair and brushes. But Sini take care of it. She take care of it.
Sini! She did it. She gave the commies to the witch man. Because she hates us. All of them do. They don't want us here. I must get dressed and tell Edmund all about it. He'll fix her. He'll have her arrested. He'll put an end to all this. What was that? It was outside that window.
Mortava.
Who's there? I can see someone. Who is it? Tell me. Tell me. Who are you?
The mail launch is coming in now, Lamont.
Hello there, Mr. Fergus.
Hello, Norton.
I can't come in any closer. Ain't got any mail anyways, but I thought you might be interested to know we found the gun.
Oh, good. Can you identify it?
No, not yet. It's been sent to headquarters in Macon. They're tracing it.
I see. Well, good luck.
So long.
There. What was that all about, Gerald?
Why, there was a murder committed on the mainland about a week ago.
Oh?
The officials believe that the killer is hiding somewhere on one of the islands.
Have they any idea who he is?
Yes, more or less. They suspect a man named Sebastian. He's a white who's loafed among these islands for years, living with the natives and existing as a shiftless beachcomber.
Well, has he turned up around here?
Not yet. They'll have a time finding him, even if he does.
Why is that?
The natives like him. They'll shield him from the authorities if they can. Say, I imagine dinner's ready. Shall we go in the house?
Oh, I was waiting for you to mention food, Gerald. Frankly, I'm starved.
Oh, my.
Well, then we'll have to do something about that right away.
Good.
Go in ahead, Margo.
All right,
come on.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Where have you people been?
We went down for the mail, Edmund.
Yes, how's the food situation, Ed?
It's all ready as soon as Polly comes down. How about a drink?
Ah, now there's a brother for you. What'll it be, Margo?
Nothing for me, thanks. I'll go up and see if I can hurry Polly along.
You, Lamont?
No, thanks.
Well, I'll have something, Edmund.
Right all.
Let's sit down, shall we?
All right, thanks.
Oh, by the way, Edmund, the men on the launch told me they'd found the murderer's gun.
Really? Did it lead to anything?
Not yet, but Norton did say that...
That was Margo.
What's wrong?
We better go up and see.
Lamont, Gerald, come quick!
What is it, Margo?
It's Polly, Miss Polly. She's dead.
Don't you think we ought to notify the police, Edmund?
Wouldn't do any good tonight, Lamont. The mainland is 80 miles away.
But, Edmund, something horrible happened to your sister. She died of fright, I know. I've seen such cases before. The same contorted, twisted face.
I'm aware of that, Lamont.
Then whatever or whoever it was is still at large. Perhaps planning even now to carry on his work.
Quite possibly.
Well, then why don't you let Lamont go to the mainland and get the police?
Because we're confronted with an even greater danger, a more immediate peril that we must all face together.
What do you mean?
Those drums. Part of a native ceremony.
But what do they have to do with your sister's death?
A great deal. The natives have always hated our entire family. They believe that they have succeeded in putting a voodoo curse on us.
You mean because of your sister's death?
Yes. When they hear of it, which they probably have already from our servant, Sini, they will come here to the house, all of them.
Why? Why?
To demand my sister's corpse.
Why, that's fantastic.
I know. But their belief is that a dead person should be prepared for burial immediately. Else a terrible calamity will occur.
But we can't let them do that.
What can be done to stop them?
Well, I have several guns upstairs. I don't know what good they'll do against terrific odds, but I can get them anyway.
Well, yes, by all means, do.
Gerald, what's happened?
The natives. Sini is leading them here.
I'll get the guns at once.
They've heard about Polly's death. They believe that they have voodoo caused it. They're coming here.
Oh! Edmund, he's falling down the stairs.
Edmund, where's Paul?
Oh,
come. Come, all you. Voodoo, curse, Wiccan.
Keep out of here.
They're swarming into the room, thousands of
them. There, bodies. Two bodies. Gobi Papaloi, take bodies.
No, no.
Don't touch those bodies.
Voodoo, curse, worm. Voodoo, curse,
let go of me. Get out of here.
No,
let
go.
Before the curtain rises on Act Two of Voodoo, let me give you some behind-the-scenes information on blue coal. You've often heard me describe blue coal as America's finest hard coal. But do you know why blue coal is such an outstanding American fuel? Well, to begin with, blue coal is mined deep down in the ground, where only the finest hard coal is found. Then it is tested and retested with the utmost care, and only the highest quality hard coal, meeting the strictest standards set up by the Blue Coal Dealers of America, only that coal is tinted a harmless blue and reaches your bin as blue coal. And believe me, there's no better safeguard against changeable weather conditions than a bin full of blue coal. For blue coal distributes steady, longer-lasting heat that keeps your home radiantly warm and healthy. And a blue coal heat regulator working with blue coal gives you even better results. Just a flick of the finger, and your furnace damper is open and shut automatically to keep your home at whatever temperature you wish. Your friendly blue coal dealer will gladly give you a free demonstration of this modern automatic heat regulator. Phone him tomorrow. And remember, try a ton of blue coal. You'll be better satisfied, and you'll be money in pocket. Your dealer's name is listed in the Where to Buy It section of your classified telephone directory under the words blue coal. And now, Act Two of Voodoo.
Well, it's almost morning. There's been no let-up in that infernal chanting.
Gerald, what will they do with the bodies when daylight comes?
Lay them out in a clearing on a bier of twigs and leaves. They'll be kept that way until nightfall. Then they'll lower them into graves.
Oh. Do you think we should wake Lamont?
No, let him sleep. He must be exhausted.
Gerald, this voodooism, how does it work?
Why, it's supposed to be a psychological thing, Margot. The victim presumably works the curse out on himself by dreading it. This brings on his undoing.
But how does a person know when he's been selected as a victim?
Well, there are many ways, Margot. I have one of them here in my pocket. It consists of three tiny dolls.
Dolls?
Yes. They're presumably the images of Polly, Edmund, me. I found them in Sini's room. The replicas of my brother and sister are both stuck with pins.
Why is that?
Well, it's one of the methods used by the natives to cause death.
But the image of you was untouched.
Yes, fortunately. Here, I'll show them to you. See? This is Polly. This is Edmund. This is... Why, my image now has pins in it, too.
Yes. Yes, they all have.
I don't understand. How did it happen?
Gerald, you're not going to believe in this thing, too, are you?
Margot, there's something I think you should know.
Yes, Gerald. You said there's something you think I should know. Gerald? Oh, this poor boy's fallen asleep, too, I guess. Gerald? Gerald?
Margo?
Gerald?
What is it? Why did you call her?
Lamont, it's Gerald. Something's happened to him.
What? Gerald? Come on, old boy. Gerald?
Lamont, is he dead?
I'm afraid so, Margo. Who are you? What are you doing here?
I'm called Sebastian.
The killer. The missing killer.
Tell me quickly. Who are the natives holding funeral rites for?
Edmund Fergus and his sister Polly. They died earlier this evening.
I see. It's almost dawn.
Why have you come here? You, an escaped murderer?
Listen, I don't know what you've heard about me. I didn't kill that man on the mainland.
You've been suspected of the crime.
Edmund Fergus put the police on my trail. He did this because he himself was the murderer.
How can you say that?
I saw him do it. He knows that I saw him. That's why he accused me. Edmund is a dangerous man. He's mad, I tell you. Mad.
Edmund Fergus is dead, you know that. You know that your accusations can never be challenged.
Edmund Fergus is not dead.
What are you saying?
I came here to warn you to take a boat to the mainland at once.
What is he talking about?
I can't stay here any longer. It isn't safe.
Wait, you're not going. I won't let you go.
Take your hands off me.
You're wanted by the police, and I shall see that they get you.
Don't be a fool. Let me go.
Come on. Look, coming over the hill. The natives, hundreds of them.
I warned you. I warned you this would happen.
There seems to be a white man leading them, urging them on.
It's Fergus. Edmund Fergus.
He's right, Lamont. It is Edmund. He's alive.
Yes. Yes, I see him now.
Hello!
Quiet. He's shouting something to them.
Follow me! Follow your God who has returned from the grave.
How do you believe what I told you?
He was right, Lamont.
I must go. They can't find me here.
You must kill my enemy!
That happens to be us, my friend. So I have to go. Good luck.
Wait, wait!
He's gone, Margot. Stand close to me, darling. They're coming. They're coming.
I shall be all-powerful.
Lamont,
no one,
what's going on downstairs? Can you hear what Edmund's saying?
Just snatches of it. He seems to be bragging about his great powers to the natives.
Why were we locked in this room? Why are we prisoners here?
Well, I don't know, Margot. Edmund must have some scheme afoot concerning us. Listen, there's someone's unlocking the door.
The trial of my enemies is about to begin.
The servants see me.
Both of you, come. Master, send for you.
Are we to be freed? Sent back to the mainland?
Master, decide that. Come.
Well, we might as well go down, Margot.
You shall now see, too.
Lamont.
Who have attempted to stand in my way, they've not...
Look at all those natives. The room is full of them.
That will be their punishment.
And do you see your friend, Edmund? He's rigged up a sort of throne at the end of the room.
You will stand before the throne of justice, both of you, where you shall be given every consideration, every chance to defend yourselves.
Defend ourselves? Defend ourselves against what? What have we done?
You have broken the laws of the island.
He's mad, Lamont, mad.
Yes, but not so mad that he didn't know what he was doing when he murdered his own sister and brother.
What are you saying?
You know that's true, Edmund. You had Polly done away with, and you yourself gave Gerald a slow poison in his drink.
That's blasphemy.
You killed them to satisfy your insane craving for power. You wish the natives to believe in your supernatural resurrection.
Enough. I've heard enough.
You killed your brother and sister to save your own neck. Deny that if you can.
Take them away. Take them away, both of them. Obey when your God speaks to you. Take them to the ceremonial ground. Place them under guard in one of the huts. Tomorrow at dawn, they shall die.
Margot. Margot.
Yes, Lamont.
The guards are sleeping.
Yes, I know.
I could only reach that infernal rope that's binding my ankles. I could free myself.
Oh, keep trying, Lamont.
Must be nearly dawn. They'll be coming for us soon. We must get free.
What's that?
The door is opening. Someone is coming into the hut. Who's there?
Quiet. It's Sebastian. I've come to help you.
Sebastian?
How did you get here without their seeing you?
Never mind that. Time is too precious to waste on talk.
Have the natives awakened yet?
No, but they will soon. I have a knife here. I'll cut your ties. Lie quietly, don't move.
All right. What are our chances for escape?
Not good.
Are there any boats nearby?
They're all being watched. There you are.
Thanks.
Now the young lady, I'll cut her bonds, too.
No, wait. I've just thought of something. Something that has one chance in 1,000 of working, but we must gamble that it will.
What? What is it, Lamont?
You must remain tied up, Margot.
Lamont, I...
Please trust me, Margot. Sebastian, are you willing to trust me, too, to do whatever I say, if it means our getting out of here safely?
Certainly.
Good. Here. I want you to wear my coat. Here, take it. Give me yours.
All right.
You must remain here in my place, Sebastian. I shall tie you with the ropes that once bound me.
I'm willing.
I must tie you quickly, then.
Where are you going, Lamont?
To try to bring freedom to all of us. There. That'll have to do.
Good luck.
Thanks. Trust me, both of you.
I wonder if he'll come back.
Oh, I'm sure he will.
Well, in any case, I'll do my best, young lady, to give you what little protection I can offer.
Listen to them. That frenzied cry.
Courage, young lady, courage.
Where is Lamont? Why doesn't he come?
There's still time. Have faith.
Bring them here. Bring them to the stake.
Master orders. Obey him.
Let go of me.
Come, come.
No, you can't do this. Edmund, listen to me. These savages obey your command. Make them stop in heaven's name before it's too late.
Go be popular. You call, master. Gobi Papaloi will prepare the victim for the sacrifice. Gobi Papaloi, obey.
Take your hands off me, all of you.
It's useless to struggle now.
Are you giving up to that?
No, no, I'm waiting for the time, the proper time to strike.
What are they doing with me? Where are they taking me?
We're in a large clearing, surrounded by the natives. In the center of the clearing, Gobi Papaloi, the witch man, waits us. In his hand, he holds the sacrificial knife.
No! No, they plan to murder us in cold blood.
It's the ritual.
Ritual? How dare a tribe of lowly snakestone-wearing savages even use that sacred
knife? Miguel, first!
Where's the mark? Why doesn't he come?
Burn! Prepare herself to die.
Very well. Very well, I see there's no chance now. You can do with me as you wish.
Don't give up hope.
Gobi Papaloi will strike. I offer sacrifice to serpent, to ancestors of serpent. Gobi Papaloi, now take life.
Oh, no, you don't!
Yes, Papaloi. White man, attack Papaloi.
Stop him, I say.
Keep a knife, you stab Papaloi.
Get that knife away from him.
Sini got knife. Now give it back to white man.
No! Sebastian, what have they done to you?
You must carry on alone.
Oh, Sebastian!
Quiet! Keep Papaloi. Sini, keep him. Now, Sini, keep you too.
But it's Sini. You shall continue the sacrifice. Kill her! Kill her!
Sini, obey!
Something holds Sini's arm. She cannot strike with knife.
I am preventing you from striking your helpless victim, Sini.
Oh. Oh, you. I see no one.
You shall find out soon enough.
Voodoo. That voodoo magic.
Strike, Sini! Continue the sacrifice. Why do you stand there like that?
Because I have willed her to do so.
Who speaks? Where did that voice come from?
You might know me, Edmund Fergus, as the Shadow.
Shadow?
So you've heard of me. Then you must know why I'm here, Edmund. I've come to put an end to your reign of terror and murder.
How dare you defy me? Use the knife, Sini.
She is powerless. Observe this, all of you. I have willed it that this girl's life be spared. Now watch as the knife is taken from Sini's hands by an unseen power. There, you see? You see her drop the knife?
Pay no attention to him. He's resorted to trickery. Cheap trickery.
You can answer that, Sini. Did you feel the pressure of my hand upon your arm? Did I make you drop that knife?
Yes. You said voodoo. Powerful voodoo magic.
Wait. Wait, all of you. Don't be swayed by an unseen voice. I am your master. I am your god. You must obey me.
That is a lie. He is not a god. He is a mortal being who tricked you into believing that he had returned from the dead. Let me tell you this. Edmund Fergus never died. He had no resurrection.
Don't listen to him. Continue the ceremony. I command you.
You command, Edmund Fergus, but none obeys. They stand silently. You are rapidly losing your hold on these people.
I must obey. You hear? I must.
Look, all of you. Observe the behavior of your god. See how frightened he acts. He's afraid of you. He's afraid of what you'll do to him.
No. No.
If he were a god, why didn't he prevent the death of your witch man, Gobi Papaloi? Why doesn't he stop me now from telling you these things?
No. Wait. Wait, don't listen to him.
There is blood on his hands. Much blood. The blood of your people and his.
Keep away from me. Stand back, all of you.
Margo, run quickly to the beach.
No. Yes, yes.
Don't come any nearer.
You're powerless now, Edmund Fergus. These people have marked you out.
Leave him alone.
Well, that's quite a story, Lamont. But as for this fellow Sebastian, I hate to disagree with you, but I wouldn't call him an exceptional hero. After all, he did what any other white man would have done in the same situation.
Not exactly, Major. You see, when the natives prepared to burn the remains of Sebastian, tied around his neck, they found a snake stone.
You mean he believed in voodoo?
Completely.
He was a member of the cult, Major.
Then he must have believed that in killing the witch man, he was dooming himself to eternal damnation.
I'm sure that he did.
Yet he killed him anyway. I wonder how he ever brought himself to do it.
A hero, Major, must be measured by the amount of fear he has in his heart.
In just a moment, the Shadow will tell you what happened to a ruthless criminal. But first, we present John Barclay, America's home heating expert. Mr. Barclay.
Thank you, Ken Roberts, and good evening, friends. Have you noticed the bright new shield so many blue coal dealers are displaying in their windows these days? We've awarded that shield and emblem as a special mark of distinction for all our blue coal dealers who have taken the John Barclay training course in modern home heating. Now, maybe you wonder just what that means. Well, the John Barclay symbol of service means that your blue coal dealer stands ready to inspect your heating plant, tell you what size coal you should use, and make recommendations for more satisfactory and more economical home heating. Every day, nearly 5,000 John Barclay trained servicemen are teaching householders all over the country the easy, economical way to heat their homes. So if you want to find out how to make your furnace work smoothly and efficiently, how to enjoy more convenient, more healthful heat for less money, call your neighborhood blue coal dealer. You can benefit from his symbol of service. It's this extra customer service that makes blue coal distinctive. Phone your neighborhood dealer tomorrow. I thank you.
Today's program is based on a story copyrighted by the Shadow Magazine. The characters, names, places, and plot are fictitious. Any similarity to persons living or dead is purely coincidental. And now, fresh from the records of the New York General Sessions Court, we bring you conclusive proof that crime does not pay. New York City, January 14th. Jerome Reuben Lewis forges check for $18.60. Crime, forgery in the second degree.
New York City, March 20th. Jerome Reuben Lewis sentenced to from 5 to 10 years in state's prison. The weed of crime bears bitter fruit. Crime does not pay. The Shadow knows.
Next week, same time, same station, the Blue Coal Dealers of America bring you another thrilling adventure of the Shadow. So be sure to listen, and be sure to phone your friendly Blue Coal Dealer for greater heating comfort at less cost. This is Ken Roberts saying, keep the home fires burning with Blue Coal.
The Shadow, who aids the forces of law and order, is in reality the Long Cranston, wealthy young man about town. Years ago in the Orient, Cranston learned a strange and mysterious secret, the hypnotic power to cloud men's minds so they cannot see him. Cranston's friend and companion, the lovely Margot Lane, is the only person who knows to whom the voice of the invisible shadow belongs. Today's drama, The Nursery Rhyme Murders. Brookside Home is a private sanitarium located in a densely wooded area in the suburbs. It's about 8 o'clock in the evening as Superintendent Alfred Foster walks down the corridor on his way to visit one of his patients.
Good evening, Bert. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks, Dr. Foster. I've been waiting for you.
You should be asleep by now, Bert.
Oh, I've been waiting for you to come and read to me.
But we can't read to you every night.
But you promised. You said if I ate all my supper, you'd read a story to me. And I eat it all, Dr. Foster. Every bit of it. The cereal and everything. Read to me now, please.
We told you, Bert, that after you'd been here a while, we'd have to stop reading to you at night.
You're not going to read to me?
You're tired tonight. A little feverish, too, I think. I'll just go to sleep, and in the morning...
I won't. You promised to read me a bedtime story.
Now, you broke your promise. Bert, you mustn't get excited like
you
that.
You broke your promise.
Bert, stay where you are. Don't come any nearer.
You're bad, and I'm going to hurt
Bert,
you.
No. Take your hands off my throat. Orderly.
I'll make you read me one.
Orderly,
you.
Hurry.
What is it, Dr. Foster? What?
Bert! Get him off me quick, Andrews,
boy. Let him go.
There. Now stay over there, Bert.
Thank you, Andrews. That was close.
He promised to read to me, and he broke his promise.
You want me to get one of the other orderlies, Dr. Foster?
No, that's all right, Andrews. But I just got a little excited. I can handle him, all right?
I don't know. I think we ought to send him over to the violent ward.
You better not send me away. You better not.
Oh, now, Bert.
You better not try and send me away. If you do, I'll hurt you all. I'll hurt you all bad.
Orderly. Be quiet, Bert, and go to sleep. 3 o'clock.
I want a drink of water, Andrews. I want a drink of water.
Go to sleep, Bert.
Please, Andrews. Please.
All right, Bert, just a second. Okay, here's your water.
I was awful thirsty.
Here you are.
Thanks, Andrews. Thanks. Now, give me those keys.
No, you don't.
Give them to me. Now, I got the keys. I'm going to get out. I'm going to get out.
At home.
Hello, this is Polly Andrews. I'm Harvey Andrews' wife.
Oh, yes. Hello, Mrs. Andrews.
Is my husband there?
I'm sorry, Mrs. Andrews, but he isn't in. All the orderlies are out in the grounds hunting for Bert Eustace. He escaped last night, you know.
Well, that's just it, operator. Our cottage is at the north end of the grounds. I understand Eustace is violent. I'm here all alone, and, well, I'm frightened.
I don't know what we can do. I'll tell Mr. Andrews to phone you when he gets back here.
Well, all right, thanks.
Not at all. Goodbye, Mrs. Andrews.
Goodbye. Who's that? Who's there?
Hello, Polly.
You! No! No! Don't!
Here's old Polly Flinders. Sat among the cinders, warming her pretty little toes. Her mother came and caught her and whipped her little daughter for spoiling her nice new clothes.
Lamont, I know it's presuming on our acquaintance, but I want to thank you and Miss Lane for coming to my office this morning when I phoned.
Not at all, Fred. Glad to be of service.
The fact is, I need your help desperately. You see, Lamont, I'm a psychiatrist, not a criminologist. I don't think it's a case for the police, but I do need help in trying to find this escaped patient.
And the